Jai Ra Da Ma Da Ba Kunjabi Ha
Swami Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthala Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaura Premanandi. Shri Prabhu. Shri Shri Ala Gopipala Bhakti. Shri Shri Gaunitai Ki. Jai Jai. So I'll read from the Prabhupada Lilamrit first. And this is from the second volume entitled Planting the Seed, which describes Srila Prabhupada's activities in New York from 1965 to 66. And this chapter is entitled Breaking Ground. The summer evening was warm, and in the storefront, the back windows, the front doors were open wide. Young men, several of them dressed in black denims and buttoned-down sports shirts with broad, dull stripes, had left their worn sneakers by the front door and were now sitting on the floor. Most of them were from the Lower East Side, and no one had to go to great trouble to come here. The little room was barren. No pictures, no furniture, no rug, not even a chair. Only a few plain straw mats. A single bulb hung from the ceiling in the center of the room. It was 7 o'clock, and about a dozen people had gathered when the Swami suddenly opened the door and entered the room. He wasn't wearing a shirt, and the saffron cloth he had draped his torso left his arm and some of his chest bare. His complexion was smooth golden brown, and as they watched him, his head shaven, his ears long-lobed, and his grave aspect, he seemed like pictures they'd seen in the Buddha in his meditation. He was old, yet erect in his posture, fresh and radiant. His forehead was decorated with the yellowish clay markings of the Vaishnava. Prabhupada recognized big bearded Howard and smiled. Oh, you have brought your friends. Yes, Howard answered in a loud, resonant voice. Ah, very good. Prabhupada stepped out of his white shoes, sat down on a thin mat, faced his congregation, and indicated they all could be seated. He distributed several pairs of brass cymbals and briefly demonstrated the rhythm. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. He began playing, a startling ringing sound. He began singing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now was the audience's turn. Chant, he told them. Some of them already knew. Gradually, others caught on. And after a few rounds, they were all chanting together. Most of these young men and few young women present had, at one time or another, embarked on a psychedelic voyage in search of a new world of expanded consciousness. Boldly and recklessly, they had entered the turbulent, forbidden waters of LSD, peyote, and magic mushrooms. Heedless of warnings, they'd risked everything and done it. Yet, there was merit to their valor, their eagerness to find the extra dimensions of the self, to go beyond the ordinary existence. Even if they didn't know what was beyond was, or whether they would ever return to the comfort of the ordinary. Nonetheless, whatever truth that they had found, they remained unfulfilled. And whatever worlds that they had reached, these young psychedelic voyagers had always returned to the Lower East Side. Now they were sampling the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. When the kirtan suddenly sprang up from the Swami's cymbals and sonorous voice, they immediately felt that it was going to be something far out. Here was another chance to trip out, quote-unquote. And willingly they began to flow with it. They would surrender their minds and explore the limits of the chanting for all it was worth. Most of them had already associated with the mantra with the mystical Upanishads and Gita, which had called out to them in mystery, eternal spirit, negating illusion. But whatever it is, this Indian mantra, let it come, they thought. Let its waves carry us far and high. Let's take it and let the effects come. Whatever the price, let it come. The chanting seemed simple and natural enough. It was sweet, and it wasn't going to harm anyone. It was, in its own way, far out. As Prabhupada chanted in his own inner ecstasy, he observed his motley congregation. He was breaking ground in new land now. As the hand cymbals rang, the lead and response of the Hare Krishna mantra swelled and filled the evening. Several neighbors were annoyed. Puerto Rican children enchanted opened the door and window, looked. Twilight came. Exotic it was, yet anyone could see that the Swami was raising an ancient prayer in praise of God. This wasn't rock or jazz. He was a holy man, a Swami, making a public religious demonstration. But the combination was strange, an old Indian Swami chanting an ancient mantra with a storefront full of young American hippies singing along. Prabhupada sang on, his shaven head held high and tilted, his body trembling slightly with emotion. Confidently, he led the mantra, absorbed in pure devotion, and they responded. More passerbys were drawn to the storefront and open door. Some jeered, but the chanting was too strong. Within the sound of the kirtan, even the car horns were faint staccato. The vibration of auto engines and the rumble of trucks continued, but in the distance now, unnoticed. Gathered under the dim electric light of the bare room, the group chanted after the leader, growing gradually from a feeble, hesitant chorus to an approximate harmony of voices. They continued clapping and chanting, putting into whatever they could, in hopes of discovering its secrets. The Swami was not simply giving some five-minute sample demonstration. For the moment, he was their leader, their guide to an unknown realm. Howard and Keith's little encounter with the kirtan in Calcutta left them outsiders. The chanting had never before come like this, right in the middle of the Lower East Side with a genuine Swami leading them. In their minds were psychedelic ambitions to see God, fantasies and visions of Hindu teachings, and the presumption that, quote, it was all in personal light. Prabhupada had encountered similar groups in the Bowery, and he knew this group wasn't experiencing the mantra in its proper disciplined reverence and knowledge. But he let them chant in their own way. In time, their submission to the spiritual sound, their purification, and their enlightenment and ecstasy in chanting and hearing Hare Krishna would come. He stopped the kirtan. The chanting had swept back the world, but now the Lower East Side rushed in again. The children at the door began to chatter and laugh. Cars and trucks made their rumblings heard once more, and a voice shouted from the nearby apartment, demanding quiet. It was now past 7:30. Half an hour had elapsed. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we'll end. Mukta, we'll pick up here again. So. So it's always wonderful to revisit or to, I won't say wax nostalgic because I wasn't there, but to hear about and to remember really how humble the beginnings of the Hare Krishna movement were, and really where the minds of the early disciples were, not just only in glorification of Srila Prabhupada, but also for those devotees who had surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, how they, what their goals in life were. They were definitely, as Prabhupada said, they were frustrated with material life, but they also were frustrated with hippie life. Neither the commercial materialism of their parents nor the psychedelic experiences of the hippie life satisfied them. It didn't satisfy the soul. They were looking, and to their credit, they weren't going to settle. They were going beyond even those comforts or those known things. And took shelter of Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, and we have the benefit now of having devotees who've been around for some time and know what to do. But I remember I was hearing from Jadarani Dasi, and she was one of the early initiates. And she said that, she described that Prabhupada was always very encouraging. You know, no matter what was going on, no matter how off-base people were, Prabhupada was always very encouraging to his fledgling young group. And so when time came for her initiation, she wanted to really make sure she dressed nicely for it. But she had no idea what that meant in the context of Krishna consciousness. So she put on her best black jeans and her best black turtleneck sweater and got her like her nice hippie jewelry out. And she was like there, and Prabhupada didn't even like skip a beat. He didn't say, go put on a sari or whatever. He just gave her the beads, gave her her name, gave her the Maha Mantra, and encouraged her in that way. And only looking back, she goes, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But she didn't know, you know, because at that time, early initiation, sometimes devotees would even show up in cut-off jeans. But as, you know, and Prabhupada accepted because, you know, the devotees at that time didn't know. Everybody was brand new. Over time, standards were put into place. You know, one should bathe before initiation. One should put on fresh cloth and tilak the whole. You know, there's an etiquette. But Prabhupada was so kind, so merciful, so encouraging that he took these diamonds in the rough and didn't think, oh, these are just stones. But he saw in everyone the spiritual potential, because he saw everyone as spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. And he would even say, you were sent to me by my spiritual master, to his disciples. So he had that vision. So I will begin the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram chayava narottamam devam sarasvatam vyasam tato jayam udirayet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. Granthulat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. So, it was indicated to me this morning that we'll be reading from the fifth canto, chapter 6, verse 17, which we have on the board here is the one you'll be reading tomorrow. The one for today is, again, one of those very long Sanskrit verses. So I'll just read it, and we'll just do the word for word together. Yashameva kaveya atmanam aviratam vija vrinja samsara parita papotapya yamanam anusavananam snapayantastataiva paraya Nitrahi aparavargam anchanantikam parama purushottam apisvayam asaratino eva driyanti bhagavito yatviraneva parishampa sarvataha. So read the word for words. Yashyameva.
Yashyameva.
In which
Krishna consciousness,
or the nectar of devotional service. Kavaya, the advancement of learned scholars, or philosophers in spiritual life. Atmanam, the self. Aviratam,
constantly.
Vivita, various. Vrijina,
full of sins.
Samsara, in material existence. Paritapa,
from miserable conditions.
Upachapyamanam,
suffering.
Anusavanam,
without stopping.
Snapayantaha,
bathing.
Daya,
by that.
Eva,
certainly.
Padaya,
great.
Nivritya,
with happiness.
He
certainly.
Apavargam,
liberation.
Anchantikam,
uninterrupted.
Paramapurusha-artam,
the best of all human achievements.
Api,
although.
Swayam,
itself.
Asaritam,
obtained.
No,
not.
Eva,
certainly.
Adriante,
endeavor to achieve.
Bhagavadiyantarena
eva,
because of a relationship
with the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Parismapta sarva
arta,
those who have ended all kinds of material desires.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Abhay Chidavinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Translation. Devotees always bathe themselves in devotional service in order to be relieved from various tribulations of material existence. By doing this, the devotees enjoy bliss and liberation. And liberation personified comes to serve them. Nonetheless, they do not accept that service, even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. For the devotees, liberation, or mukti, is very unimportant, because, having attained the Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable, and have transcended all material desires. So again, repeat. Devotees always bathe themselves
in devotional service
in order to be relieved
from the various tribulations of material existence.
By doing this, the devotees enjoy bliss, and liberation personified comes to serve them.
Nonetheless,
they do not accept that service.
Even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself.
For the devotees,
liberation or mukti is very unimportant.
Because having attained the Lord's transcendental loving service,
they have attained everything desirable
and have transcended all material desires.
Purport.
Devotional service unto the Lord is the highest attainment for anyone desiring liberation from the tribulations of material existence. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 22,
Yam lava chaparam labham manyate na dikam tataha.
Gaining this, one thinks there is no greater gain. When one attains the service of the Lord, which is non-different from the Lord, one does not desire anything material.
Mukti means relief from material existence. Bilva Mangala Thakur says, Mukti Muktalanjala Sevatesman. For the devotee, mukti is not a very great achievement. Mukti means being situated in one's constitutional position. The constitutional position of every living being is that of the Lord's servant. Therefore, when the living entity is engaged in the Lord's loving service, he has already attained mukti. Consequently, a devotee does not aspire for mukti, even if it is offered by the Supreme Lord himself.
Om Aganatimanandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshu Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrachatam Sahagana Raghunatam Tam Tajivam Sarvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishikam Vitamscha E Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Hadhe Vrinda Vineshwari Vrishabhanu Sude Devi Pranami Hari Vye Vanchakalpa Thurumbascha Kripa Sindhu Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Again, translation. Devotees always bathe themselves in devotional service in order to be relieved from the various tribulations of material existence. By doing this, the devotees enjoy supreme bliss, and liberation personified comes to serve them. Nonetheless, they do not accept that service, even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. For devotees, liberation, or mukti, is very unimportant, because having obtained the Lord's transcendental loving service, they have attained everything desirable and have transcended all material desires. So oftentimes, when we read about the path given to us in the Vedas, there are four purusharthas, four things which human beings endeavor for. Naturally. The first is dharma. Dharma is that desire to fulfill one's duties in life, one's obligations to one's wife and children, to the society in general, to one's forefathers, to the devas. The second is called artha, which means economic development, working, making money, accumulating wealth, and so forth. The third is kama, or sense enjoyment, not just sex life, but also eating, sleeping, mating, defending, all these activities involved with the senses. And the fourth, and oftentimes considered to be the highest, is mukti, moksha, to extricate oneself from samsara, to somehow free oneself from material bondage and the karma of one's activities and attain liberation. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his teachings describes that there is a fifth and higher purushartha, goal in life, which is Krishna bhakti. It's called panchama purushartha, which means the fifth. Oftentimes in certain Vaishnava sampradayas, such as the Sri Sampradaya, they consider bhakti and mukti to be the same thing. They use the terms interchangeably, and they say that mukti really means bhakti, because you cannot really attain liberation unless you attain bhakti. And that's
And that's fine. We have no argument with that point. However, we make a distinction between liberation and bhakti in the sense that when one attains pure devotional service, liberation is already there. In the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the first chapter, Rupa Goswami describes there are six characteristics of bhakti, which is indicated in this verse here. The first is that it brings relief from material suffering. The second is that it is the source of all auspiciousness. The third, jog my memory a little bit here. The third is that it brings transcendental pleasure, bhakti ananda, brings transcendental happiness. The fourth is that pure devotional service is very rarely achieved. Krishna will give liberation, but pure devotional service, he will not give it. Why? Because the devotee, Krishna is not controlled by anything except by the wishes of his pure devotee. So therefore, there has to be a tremendous amount of trust to, in order for that to be given. The fifth is that those who are attain pure devotional service deride or make very light of liberation. And six is that pure devotional service is the only means by which we can attract Krishna. There's nothing in this world, no amount of wealth we can accumulate, no amount of beauty we can, you know, no amount of makeup we can put on our faces. But if the one attains pure devotional service, Krishna is attracted. So these six qualities describe the characteristics of bhakti, of pure devotional service, what the nature of pure devotional service is. And therefore, the devotees, first of all, of the different types of liberation, sayuja mukti, means that one merges into the body of the Lord. And devotees will never accept such a proposition. For those who have attained pure devotional service, if they're given a choice of either merging into the Brahman or the body of the Lord or going to hell, the devotees say, well, at least I'll have some service to do while I'm in hell. There'll be people to preach to, all kinds of fallen souls for me to help. But to obtain this merging is suicide for the devotee. We would never even consider such a proposition. Other types of loka, such as swarupya, salokya mukti, which means to attain a beautiful, the similar form of the Lord, or to accept residence in the Lord's abode. The devotee will accept such forms of liberation if it means that we can actually serve Krishna in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Therefore, every morning during Viprayashikshasakam, na dhanam na janam na sudhanam, kavitam va jagadisha kamaye, mama janmane janmaneshi, Govinda, mama janmane janmaneshari, bhavatad bhaktir hai tuki tayi. Mahaprabhu prays in his Shikshasakam that not only is he not praying for any material benefit, such as wealth, followers, the association of a beautiful wife, anything with that, but he's saying, I don't even want liberation. Mama janmani janmaneshwari, bhavatad bhaktir ahai tuki tayi. So janna janmaneshwari. He said, in my life, birth after birth, give me the benediction of ahai tuki tayi, of unmotivated pure devotional service. Hetu means cause. So sometimes if we engage in activity, we want some benefit from it. Well, we want something for it. Everything has, like, you know, a businessman, you know, when a salesman wants to make a sale, they're very friendly, they're very flattering, they're very, whatever, sweet with their words, but they want something. They want some exchange, they want something. But for those devotees,
practically speaking, when a soul comes to the point of pure devotional service, having attained that service, there's nothing else that they want. What else do they need? They have pure love of God in their heart, and they're engaged in service. Therefore, even something such as liberation, which is strived for by jnanis, by who perform great austerities, people go to great lengths just to become liberated from the cycle of birth and death. But for the devotee, it doesn't matter to them, because having attained pure devotional service, that is liberation. If one comes to a point where they're 100% dedicated to the service of Krishna, they have pure love of God in their heart, even liberation is just a minor thing to them, because they're already on the liberated platform. It's described that mukti is actually the maidservant of bhakti. So you may come to a household, and the servants there may not be inclined to serve you, because who are you? They don't know you. But if the master of the house says, "Oh, welcome," then all their servants will come to serve you automatically. You don't even need to go to them directly. "Oh, you need a place to stay? Oh, set my friend up with a room. Draw them a bath, give them some fresh clothes, serve them a nice meal," right? Because if the servant is favorable to the visitor of their home, then all their servants will automatically do the needful. But if the master of the house doesn't know you, then the servants will not be inclined. They may or may not be inclined to serve you. So bhakti, so mukti, liberation, is the servant of bhakti. So for those devotees who are serving Krishna, automatically liberation is there. It's not a separate endeavor. The definition that Rupa Goswami gives of pure devotional service, and this is a verse that is quoted many, many times and is very, very important to learn, is Anya Bilashita Shunyam. Yanakana Amanipitam. Anupulyena Krishna Anushinam Utame Bhaktir. That pure devotional service is Anya Bilashita Shunyam. It is devoid of mixed emotions, mixed feelings. There's no separate desire in the motivation for pure devotional service. Nor is it jnana karma anavitam. Nor is it impeded by, nor is it covered by desires for liberation or materialistic. And it is favorable. Anukulyena and Krishna anushilam. And it is for the pleasure of Krishna. So if we make Krishna's happiness our life's goal, then automatically happiness comes to us. Because if Krishna is pleased by our endeavors, and if the spiritual master is pleased, automatically we become happy. Yasya prasada bhagava prasado. That if we get the mercy of the spiritual master, automatically we get the mercy of Krishna. And therefore, this is a way we actually find relief from material suffering. Therefore, in this verse, the first sentence is, devotees always bathe themselves in devotional service in order to be relieved from the various tribulations of material existence. We don't try to find happiness outside of devotional service. And by doing so, the devotees enjoy supreme bliss, and even liberation personified comes to serve them. So naturally, and of course, the form of devotional service in this age of Kali begins and is foremost with the chanting of the holy name. And therefore, many of these same descriptions, snapanam padam vichayate shri krishna sankirtanam, that this snapanam, this bathing, bathing not only means that we become purified, but on a hot day, especially you see this in India, you travel to these various holy places where they have these bathing guts. The local children just come running in and they dive right in the water and they get relief from the hot summer sun. And so this concept or this idea of bathing not only means that we become purified, but also relief. There's a sense of relief The material world is like a forest fire. And therefore, if you find somehow rains come, there's relief. So it is about 9 o'clock. I think I'll end here. Does anybody have any questions or comments or realizations?
No? I'm a little confused about you said that Krishna would offer a devotee liberation.
I'm sorry?
You said that Krishna would offer a devotee liberation.
Liberation?
Yeah.
Well,
Krishna would offer it.
Krishna will offer it?
Yeah. The first body of.
Oh. Well, let's see. Nevertheless, they do not accept that service, even if it is offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So, Krishna has said that if you say you're my devotee, you're really not my devotee. But if you're the devotee of my devotee, then you're really my devotee. So Krishna is not only eager to accept service from his devotees, he's actually even more eager to give service. In the 10th canto, there's a very nice description that Bhrigu was a great sage who he and other sages were trying to determine who is supreme, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, or Lord Brahma. And because Bhrigu was a son of Brahma, he had a connection with these personalities directly. So he said, I'll determine who's supreme. And the factor which they used was, how easily is the Lord angry? How well does he control his anger? So there are offenses that one can make with one's mind, with one's words, and with one's actions. Offenses made in the mind is one type of offense. But worse than that are offenses that we make with our tongue, by speaking, and worse than that are offenses we make by our actions. So he went to go visit first Lord Brahma, and he made an offense in his mind. He didn't give his proper respects. Not only is Brahma the chief amongst devas, but he's Bhrigu Maharaj's father. So by not doing so, he's supposed to offer his obeisances, but he just kind of stands there and looks around. And immediately Brahma gets very angry. He's like, you're my son, and blah, blah, blah. And it was going to really punish him heavily. Fortunately, Mother Saraswati stepped in and said, no, please forgive him. So they said, oh, okay. So then he went to go see Lord Shiva. And of course, he and Lord Shiva are brothers. Lord Shiva was born from Brahma's forehead, and Bhrigu Maharaj was also his son. So Lord Shiva goes, oh, my brother, come, embrace me, give me a hug. And he said, oh, no, you've been hanging out in these cremation grounds and covering yourself with ash. You should take a bath first, and then you can hug me. And again, Lord Shiva got very angry and was going to just take his trident and end him right there. But Mother Parvati stepped right in. And she said, no, please don't. He's your brother. Then Bhrigu went to go visit Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, this is a form of Mahavishnu, who's sleeping. He's on a natashesh, lots of jewelry, and he's sleeping. So Bhrigu Maharaj comes over and kicks him in the chest. Like, hey, wake up. And immediately Lord Vishnu wakes up and he goes, oh, I'm so sorry. You came to my home and I didn't even acknowledge your existence. Oh, I'm such a terrible host. Please come. He sits him on the throne. He said, oh, your feet are so soft. They must have been very hurt by you kicking my chest. I hope you can forgive me. He said, actually, you kicking in my chest was my great good fortune, because my wife is Lakshmi Dev, and I always want her to reside in my heart, but my heart is so impure. And so therefore, you're such a saintly person. By you kicking me in the chest, you've made my heart a worthy place for Lakshmi Dev to reside. And so in this way, he's serving his devotee very nicely. And Bhrigu Maharaj goes, oh, he must be supreme. Because I did the worst offense. And not only did he not take offense,
But look at the qualities he's exhibiting. So therefore, Bhikkhu said, Lord Vishnu is supreme. And so this is the Lord's mood. Nothing can control the Lord. But the love of his devotee can control him. So this is why actually Rupa Goswami says that pure devotional service is very... Shishi Radhagopi Vallabha ki. Jai Jagannath, Jai Baldev, Jai Subhadra ki. Jai. Shishi Gorni Tai ki. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. So he said, this is why Lord Vishnu does not give pure devotional service very easily. He'll give any material benediction. He'll give any liberation even. But pure devotional service, he will not give easily. Why? Because if we attain pure devotional service, the Lord is controlled by that. Nothing controls Krishna, but he is controlled by pure devotional service, by devotees' pure desires. So therefore, one has to become very worthy of such a thing. So the Lord is always eager to serve. He's always serving creation. By maintaining the material universe, he's actually serving those who are the most fallen. So he's willing to serve his devotee and serve according to the desire of the living entity. He's willing to serve. But for those devotees who are pure in heart, have no desire other than love of God, Krishna is controlled by that. So he's willing to do everything. He'll even change reality to suit to make his devotees' words become true. He's even willing to be... that's why he tells Arjuna, you declare boldly. In Bhagavad Gita, he says, you declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. He says, if I say it, nobody may not believe me. I used to steal butter. Nobody will believe me. But if you say it, Arjuna, because you're my pure devotee, if you say it, then people will accept. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we'll end here unless Mukti has some jewels he wants to rain upon us. Yeah.
Just one thing about Prabhupada in the beginning, and it's still. There's always new people coming. It's always the beginning for a lot of people.
Oh sure.
And Prabhupada is very, he's very tolerant. Like Mother Jadarani came in her blue and everything. So many things. He'd probably go outside and he'd see the people, the students after class eating at Dunkin' Donuts or smoking or something.
Yeah.
And probably he didn't care. And how else could you be? If you come from a United States to some country where they've never played baseball before, and you try to teach a bunch of kids how to play baseball, and if they finally hit it, and then they run to third, and then the second, or a bunch of little kids, they just run all over the place. And, that's basically what Prabhupada was dealing with. There's a bunch of little kids that were just like running around. In a situation like that, how else can you be? But just like, no, not that way, run that way.
Yeah. Well, it's like a devotee once I heard, a very nice point, said, when you're teaching a child to walk, they're going to fall down. So does that mean the first time that they try to walk, they fall down, you stay down? Oh, you forget? No. You just keep encouraging. Eventually, the child gains more short-leggedness, and little by little, they become more prominent. So, yeah, that's a very nice point. Thank you very much. Granchara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shara Bhajavinda Bhakti Venanta Swami Shri Prabhupada ki.